Brisbane, Australia, Adam Devlin on iTunes International.
We've said a million times we change. Bring myself to say those words again. The piper never changes tune. You can't grow apples on the moon. Hurtful things we say still penetrate, and whispered sorries always come too late. Damage has been done. What are we going to tell our son? I want to spare his broken heart, break it gently, that we'll live apart. Don't know the proper way to say. Those weekly outings never work, you know. Buying gifts and candy, picture shows. They can't replace the man around. Your voice, your touch, your manly sound. I guess the trouble is I love you still, and if it comes to that, I always will. No, please don't cry, it's just too late. Now hurry on, she's waiting at the gate.
This is Bondi Tunes International, and that is a song called Changes from Olivia Newton-John in 1972. Olivia passed away on August 8th, and I'm joined by Adam Devlin in Brisbane. He's our music guru and probably her biggest fan. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hi, Henry. Hello, listeners.
I just wanted to mention, when I woke to this news on that Monday morning of the 8th of August, and saw, you know, footage of her, and I thought, what is going on here? And then I realized that they were announcing that she had passed away.
Yeah.
I immediately thought of you, Adam, because, you know, I know how much you love her and how many times she has been your pick of the week over our 13-year tenure on Bondi Tunes International.
Yes, in fact, she was our very first pick of the week years ago.
Wow.
With Physical, that was the very first pick of the week we did. Was her biggest hit ever.
Wow.
So, you know, it's the first song I can ever remember learning who sang it was Long Live Love by Olivia Newton-John.
Wasn't that a Eurovision entry?
No. It was in 1974.
Yes, and what a year that was, eh?
The year that ABBA won. Olivia, of course, was representing the UK. And funny little side story, they had a public vote for the song. And they even had a public vote for what she would wear.
Really?
And yes, they had a number of dresses, and they were, and you could say vote for which one you wanted her to wear. And she has, for a long time, she said she hated both the song and the dress.
Did she have to wear the song, the dress?
Yes, she did.
It was
part of the deal.
I noticed, Adam, that, you know, we've just played Changes from 1972,
yeah.
and these are lesser known songs than a lot of the mainstream media have been playing, including myself on our music show. These are different, and some of them I've never heard before, but they're damn good. I listened to them just before we came on air.
Yeah, what I wanted to do a bit of a deep dive into her recording catalogue for this tribute to her, because as you said, she's incredibly important to me as an artist. She's provided the soundtrack to my life so far, and every high point, every major significant event in my life is associated in some way to an Olivia Newton-John song.
Yes.
So what I wanted to do, and you know, I've obviously in the last week, it's been a week today since she died. I've watched a lot of tributes from a lot of people right around the world, and I have to say, even I was stunned by the outpouring of emotion globally over her passing. You know, it's still it just seemed that the whole world just started to cry, and it was such a beautiful thing to be part of.
Yes.
But what I wanted to do, but most of those tributes were focusing obviously on her more popular stuff. Like this, you know, I Honestly Love You. Obviously the songs from Greece and Xanadu, obviously Physical, but not much after that.
Yeah.
But of course, Olivia Newton-John is much more than Greece, Xanadu and Physical.
Indeed.
you know, she had a 59-year career. She was active in the entertainment industry for 59 years. In that time, she produced 26 studio albums, 6 live albums, 14 compilation albums, 70 singles, and 6 soundtrack albums.
Gosh.
And in the process, selling over 110 million albums globally, that 110 million figure does not include the Grease soundtrack, because that is not counted as an Olivia Newton-John album.
How interesting, yes.
Yeah. So, and you know, Grease has sold over 100 million copies on its own. So if you put that to it, then she's, you know,
She sang a lot of songs in Grease, let's face it.
Absolutely. Mm. There's a lot. She did a lot of it, but it's not counted. For it to be counted as an album, for a soundtrack to be counted as an album by the artist, they have to have more than half of the songs on the soundtrack need to be by that artist.
Right.
And Olivia's in Greece, that isn't the case. It is the case in Xanadu, so she got away with Xanadu being counted as an album for her. but Greece, strangely, is not counted as an Olivia Newton-John album. It's a soundtrack album.
Yeah, okay.
The song we just played, Changes, it was well known in 1972 in the UK in a small circuit of people. It's one of the rare examples of Olivia writing a song herself. She is not known as a songwriter, although she did write songs throughout her entire career.
Is that right? That's interesting.
Yeah, and she wrote this song. And it's interesting, the reason I picked this, not only is it so beautifully sung and so heartfelt, but it's one of those rare songs that deal with the handing over of a child from parent to parent who have separated, and what the impact that has on the parents and on the child. And you know, there's a line in that song that just breaks my heart every time. And you know, the line is, you know, you're not going to see your dad every day.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just heartbreaking stuff. And she wasn't even married at this time, let alone being a parent when she wrote it. Mm. But she often said in interviews that that song in particular was a reflection of her own parents divorcing.
Right.
When she was young. And so, you know, she's writing from a very early age in her career, she's writing from the heart about issues that, and emotions that are actually very real to her. And that's something that she continued doing with her songwriting in particular throughout her entire career. Mm. You know, so she started off, Henry, in 1971 with her first album, If Not For You, was released. And of course, the single of the same name, it's a Bob Dylan song. And she took it to the top of the charts in the UK, Australia, but not in the US.
Of course, she had not broken the US really until Greece. Is that fair to say?
Oh no, she had.
Who was the other Australian in America that actually introduced her to the music industry?
You're talking about Helen Reddy.
I am indeed, and she's obviously
I Am Woman fame.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Olivia had had a couple of hits in America while she was based in the UK, and when she released "I Honestly Love You" in 1975. Helen Reddy basically said to her, look, you've got a number one here in America. If you want to make it in America, you need to be in America. So you need to move here. If America's your target, you need to be here. And so she decided that that's what she would do. And the rest is, as they say, is history. She, yes. You know, I Honestly Love You was a massive song for her. It topped the charts in several markets, including Australia and the US. It won her her first two Grammy Awards, and a whole string of other awards she won for that song. And of course, it was co-written by her fellow Australian, Peter Allen.
Of course.
Mm. And then after that, her next single was Have You Never Been Mellow? Again in 1975, off the album of the same name, and that was also a number one hit for her in America.
Right.
So she had a couple of hits, a couple of her number one hits in a row in America on the main charts. But what's really impressive is when you look at from I Honestly Love You through to Come On Over in 1976, she had seven consecutive number one hit singles on the adult contemporary chart in America. That's seven consecutive wow. songs, one after the other. It all went to number one.
Really?
Yes.
The things you don't know, thank God you're here, because I didn't know yeah. half of this stuff.
And you know, those songs were I Honestly Love You, Have You Never Been Mellow, Please, Mr. Please, Something Better to Do, Let It Shine, and Come On Over. Now, I haven't... I tried to do a bit of research on this today, but, and as far as I can tell, that is a record that still hasn't been broken today.
Wow. Okay.
yeah. Now, so this, we're really now getting into sort of the middle phase of her career.
Mm.
And I'd really like to play another song now if we can, Henry.
Sure.
Just, this is a song that I was obsessed with this song when I first heard it in, when it first came out and in 1975. It's off her album, Have You Never Been Mellow. And it is just one of the most beautiful songs. She sings it so achingly. There's just heartache in this song, and she pleads in this song, and it just is a stunning recording. And any tribute that I was doing to her would always feature this song in it. So here she is. Here is Olivia Newton-John with her number one hit from 1975, Please, Mr. Please.
Corner of the bar there stands a jukebox with the best of country music, old and new. You can hear your five selections for a quarter and somebody else's songs when yours are through. I got good Kentucky whiskey on the counter, and my friends around to help me ease the pain, till some button-pushing cowboy plays that love song. And here I am just missing you again. Please, Mr. Please, don't play B-17. It was our song, it was his song, but it's over. Please, Mr. Please, if you know what I mean, I don't ever want to hear that song again. Behind. Just a note that said, I'm sorry, by your picture.
And if you have just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International, and I'm talking with Adam Devlin in Brisbane about, well, we're basically doing a tribute to Olivia Newton-John, of course, who recently passed away. And we're doing kind of a timeline of her, you know, of her life, Adam.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just her life, and mainly her career, but also a bit of her life. Mm. Because she was a very public figure throughout her entire career, and particularly from sort of 96 onwards, when she had cancer. And sort of she became a very vocal advocate for cancer research globally, and she raised a phenomenal amount of money for various charities around the world over the years.
Do you know what, Adam? Sorry to interrupt you. A lot of people don't realize how early she got cancer.
Yeah.
Everyone sort of her creating this awareness over the years. A lot of people only sort of realized that she had cancer a long time. What was it? 1996.
Yeah. And basically, she had recorded four new songs for a compilation album called Back to Basics in 1992. Mm. I've just got to correct myself. It was 92 that she got cancer, not 96. Apologize for that. She was announced a world tour to promote the new album, and then it was discovered that she had breast cancer. So the album was released, but the world tour was cancelled, and she came back to Australia. She had a mastectomy, she had chemotherapy, she had reconstructive surgery done on her breast, and then she came back to Australia to her farm up on the hinterland off Byron Bay to recuperate.
Right.
And while she was there, she says that she just started waking up in the middle of the night and with songs in her head, and so she would get up and she would just go and out into the living area in her house and she would sit down and write these songs.
Right.
And that resulted in an album called Gaia, One Woman's Journey. But before we get to that, Henry, I just want to quickly brush over her main stage of her popular career, which was the 80s, the 75 to 85. You know, from 75 to 85, there really wasn't a bigger pop star on the planet than Olivia Newton-John. She had multiple hit after hit after hit right around the world. She had a string of albums. There was Totally Hot in 78, Physical in 81, Soul Quiz and The Rumour followed that in the late 80s. And each of those albums had success in various places around the world, but particularly Totally Hot and Physical. Physical, of course, everyone will know the song Physical. It was a massive hit in 1981.
It sure was. Along with the workouts and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. The timing of it, you know, it was just that sort of timing rarely happens where, you know, the world was going fitness crazy. Of course, Jane Fonda had her video cassettes out for workouts, and there were a number of other people were doing that sort of stuff as well. And then Olivia came out, recorded the song Physical. Now, funny little tidbit, the song Physical was actually written with a male singer in mind, and it was offered to Rod Stewart initially.
Oh, really?
And Rod Stewart turned it down. He went, no, that's maybe a bit raunchy for me.
but not too raunchy for her.
Well, then it went to Tina Turner, and Tina Turner said, I don't think I can get away with doing that either.
Who wrote and of that course, song, Tina, sorry?
It was Steve Kibner and okay. another, sorry, the other person's left my mind at the moment, but it was Steve Kibner, an Australian, by the way, who wrote that, or co-wrote that. And Olivia was managed by the same person that Tina Turner was managed by, and so when Tina turned it down, it turned up in a box of demo tapes for Olivia to go through. Because back in the day, what would happen was an artist like Olivia or Tina or people like at that level, they would say to their managers, I'm doing a new album, get me some songs. And so that manager would then go out to songwriters and say, send us some songs for a new Olivia Newton-John album. And so there was always a pile of demo tapes going around these managers and artists of songs. And many of them had been offered to various people previously and turned down. And Physical was one of those songs. And she got it. She listened to it. She liked it. She thought that she could do something with it. She thought it was a bit rockier, a bit raunchier than her normal stuff. And following on from Greece.
It's the story of her life in Greece as well.
Absolutely. You know, she enjoyed the change of image that at the end of Greece. And so she thought, you know, let's play with that a bit and see what she can do with that. And, of course, the outcome was Physical, which went on to spend, Henry, a staggering 10 weeks at number one in America.
In America, that's, I mean, it's big anywhere to be having that consistency. But in America, it must have been just so much tougher.
And in fact, she doesn't get this credit very often, but Physical is the biggest selling single of the entire 1980s in America.
So it's really amazing.
When you think of the people who came after her in the 80s, you've got Prince, you've got Michael Jackson, you've got Madonna. None of those had a bigger selling single in the 80s than Olivia Newton-John did with Physical.
And isn't that amazing to think of how big the likes of Michael Jackson was, for example, especially in the 80s, you know, with Thriller coming out. And, you know, he had movie directors doing his videos for, you know, MTV had just come out. So videos suddenly became really important. So, you know, that it's an amazing story that you tell of the 80s with Olivia doing
and
better.
Yeah, seriously, from 75 to 85, there was not a bigger pop star on the planet.
Gosh.
A lot of people today don't realise that, especially people, you know, who weren't born or didn't live through that era.
Absolutely.
A lot of people know don't know of anything before Greece, and many people don't know of anything much after Greece. That's fine. I have no hesitation with that. I mean, it's one of the most successful films of all time.
And of course, it was Xanadu as well. I don't know how well the movie did, but I know the album did pretty well. The music from Xanadu.
The movie wasn't successful. It was a critical failure. Understandably, there were some major issues with that film. She's amazing in it, I have to say.
And of course, you have to say. It was Gene Kelly's last film as well, wasn't it?
It was Gene Kelly's last film. And Olivia has said many times that, you know, she can't believe that she actually got to dance and sing with Gene Kelly in a film.
I mean, what a gig. What a gig.
What a gig. Yep. Mm. After that was done, she said, you know, that was a box that had been ticked that she had never had any sort of inclination that would ever get ticked.
Yeah.
This is more on the personal side than the professional side. But she met Matt Latanzi, who was a dancer in Xanadu. And they started dating. Yes. And they ended up married and they had a child together called Chloe, who's now a performing artist herself. Let's just go back a little bit, back to when she was in Australia recovering from cancer. So she had two things going on at this time in her life. She was, as I said, recuperating from chemotherapy and surgery for her breast cancer, and she was busy writing this album, Gaia. And at the same time, her marriage to Matt Latanzi was slowly but surely falling apart. And so the songs on Gaia, and it's the first time that she had written and produced an album on her own. And it's an amazing album. If you're looking for something a little bit different from Olivia Newton-John, something a bit more mature, something a bit meatier than your standard pop ballads and pop songs, Gaia, One Woman's Journey, is a good place to start, because it really does cover a lot of really serious topics, of not only about relationships, also about the environment. Olivia has been a consistent environmental campaigner her entire career. And there are several songs on that album around the environment. And of course, then there are also songs on there about her health and dealing with cancer. And I think this is a good time, Henry, if we can slot another song in.
Sure.
This is a song that she wrote it one night in Byron Bay on her farm. And it's called Not Going to Give In To It. And it's fairly self-explanatory, but it's basically a mantra to herself saying that she's not going to give in to all of the negatives that were in her life at the time. And that, you know, she could be better and bigger and stronger than all of the negatives, which really personifies Olivia Newton-John's personality. You know, she was so positive about everything in life. But anyway, let's have a listen to this now. Here's Olivia with Not Going to Give In To It.
me voy a rendir, no, no, no me voy a rendir, no, no, no me voy a rendir, no, no, no me voy a rendir. Oh, I'm not gonna give in to it, no, I'm not gonna give in to it, no, no, I'm not gonna give in to it, no, I'm not gonna give in to it. There are times where the moon shines in my eyes and haunts my mind and I can't sleep a wink and I really don't wanna think. There are times when I feel if I sleep I'll die but I dare not cry and I run from my tears and I fight them back with my fears. But I'm not gonna give in to it, no, I'm not gonna give in to it, no, no.
Just joined us. I'm Henry from Bondi Tunes International. I'm talking with Adam Devlin, our music guru in Brisbane in Queensland, and we're doing a tribute to Olivia Newton-John, who recently passed away. Adam, now we're probably doing this in a timeline, and I'm just wondering if we're moving into the early 90s with Olivia now.
We are, actually. We are now into sort of the mid-90s.
Right.
And she continued to release albums during the 90s. Not many of them were hugely successful, though, but she continued to work. Mm. She continued to record and release. And so you had albums, you had a couple of Christmas albums come out. There were a couple of duets albums, which are both very good. One's called A Collection of Songs. The other one is called Two. The album called Two is predominantly her writing and singing duets with Australian singers.
Right.
So on there you've got people like Darren Hayes, you've got Keith Urban, you've got Billy Thorpe, you've got Peter Allen. She does a duet with the late Peter Allen on there. Tina Arena's on there. There's a whole bunch of famous Australian singers on that album with her, and it's a stunningly good album. And then there were a couple of... She did a couple of Christmas albums, absolutely. Mm. There was... One with John Farnham, which was in 2007.
She was good friends.
Sorry, no. Sorry, it wasn't. I'm getting that wrong. It was Friends for Christmas in 2016 with John Farnham.
Wow. Okay.
And that was a double platinum selling album here in Australia. And it won an ARIA award as well for biggest selling album of the year. In 2012, she did This Christmas with John Travolta, which was another Christmas album. In 2007, she did her own album called Christmas Wish. Which also charted at the bottom of the charts in America, but it did chart for her. Mm. In that period, she also released an album called Stronger Than Before, which was an album of songs that she either co-wrote or wrote or you know, brought in specifically, had songwriters write for her. And it was an album dedicated to healing. And it was just people who were going through pain or heartbreak or physical illness, and it was an album of inspiration, songs that to help lift your spirit.
Yes.
Again, a beautiful album, not commercial, not aimed at the chart. She wasn't trying to have hits with this stuff. In by this stage in her career, in the early 2000s, she was doing what she wanted to do. And she was quite open about that. She, in multiple interviews, I saw her say that, you know, if people find it, that's fantastic, but that's, you know, the people who needed it would find it, and that wasn't the mainstream pop audience.
Yeah.
Then we get to 2006, and she recorded and released an album called Grace and Gratitude. Mm-hmm. Now, this album is, it's a new age, new sort of world music type album. Mm. Absolutely not aimed at the charts. It's a healing meditative album to help people who are going through cancer.
Right.
Something she had gone through twice by this stage in her career.
Can I, sorry to interrupt you. We've got more time than I thought on this special we're doing. Do you think, and this is probably a rhetorical question, but do you, obviously her cancer changed the way she wrote, what she wrote, that kind of thing. And I just wonder about an alternative, what would have happened if she didn't have cancer? Because it certainly, obviously, was a huge effect on her writing and singing.
Absolutely. Look, if she didn't have cancer, then the tour to go with Back to Basics would have gone ahead in 92.
Yeah.
There were four new songs on that. One of them was called I Need Love, and it was produced by Giorgio Moroder, one of the biggest music producers in the world. Mm. If she had been able to, and that was an amazing song, if she had been able to promote that, that would have been a massive hit. That album and that song would have been hits for her. Mm. And that would have catapulted her into the 90s and the new century as a contemporary mainstream recording artist.
Right.
Now, fate intervened and that didn't happen. And so her recording career, whilst it continued, and she continued to have hits along the way, but her focus changed.
Yes,
and
of course.
Her priorities changed. And she realised, and she was quite open about this in several interviews that I've seen over the years, she was, all of a sudden, she no longer wanted to chase the hit record anymore. She wanted to do something that meant something. She wanted to touch people with her music.
Yeah.
She wanted to help people with her music. And so the second, that sort of last quarter of her career, of her recording career, you've got albums like Indigo, Women of Song, you've got Stronger Than Before, you've got Grace and Gratitude, and you've got Live On, which was her second last album, which are all songs with a purpose, songs with meaning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, during this period, the main focus of her life during this period was predominantly raising awareness and funds for cancer research.
And we will talk about her wellness centre in Melbourne.
Yes.
I just want to briefly talk about her friends, because Olivia Newton-John had friends in high places. And, you know, just to explain to people who may not know, but the Bee Gees were born in Britain, but they came to Australia before they were even teenagers, became teenagers up in Brisbane, where you are.
Went not on far from where I live.
Is that right? And they went on a radio show, And they called themselves the Brothers Gibb. And the DJ said on breakfast TV, radio, he said, "Jays, mate, you're the BJs." did you know that? That's a true story.
I did not know that. No, yeah, that's
became
the
Bee Gees.
Your good friend around the planet on iTunes International.
On the TV show Sing Sing Sing, hosted by Johnny O'Keefe. Okay. And it was a talent competition. And the prize, the first prize, was a trip to London.
Oh.
And so, and she was at the time dating, in fact, she was engaged to Ian Turpie, who was a celebrity here at the time.
Oh, I remember him, yeah.
he went on to host The Price is Right for 100 years in the 70s
That's
and 80s.
That's right, 100 years or so, yes. How did she get together with him? That's really bizarre.
Well, in the 60s, he was quite a handsome, debonair sort of actor, cabaret performer in Australia. And was quite the celebrity, particularly in Melbourne. And they started performing on the same sorts of shows and such, and they became quite friendly, and then they started dating, and then they got engaged.
Gee, what happened?
And they actually starred together in Olivia's very first movie, which was 1965's Funny Things Happen Down Under.
Oh.
Which was a telly movie, and it was actually the first co-production between New Zealand and Australia, which is interesting.
That's amazing.
And it was a telly movie, and it did quite well, and it had a number of songs that Olivia sings in it. It's a really fun movie. It's a children's movie, essentially, Christmas movie. But it's well worth having a look, and it is available. I think it's available on YouTube, actually, if anyone hasn't seen it and they want to see it. You can just Google Funny Things Happen Down Under.
Funny Things Happen Down Under. Have you seen that? Of course you have.
I have.
Of course
it's lovely.
I'll definitely check that.
And of course, she was engaged to him, and her mother was saying, "You've got to take this prize and you've got to go to London." And she kept cancelling it. And then eventually her mother just booked the tickets and they left and they went.
Mm.
And Olivia hated it when she went back to London. And
We need to remind our audience that she was born in the UK and came out to Australia at the age of 6, right?
Born in Cambridge, England, and I thought she was 5 when she moved out. Five or six when she moved to Australia. And so when she went back, when she sort of cashed in the prize to winning that competition, and she went back to the UK, she hated it. And her mother went with her, and they got a small flat in London, and she just started to sort of, you know, going around to try and see if she could get any jobs singing.
Do you think her mother was a bit rough on her?
I think her mother knew that
she
was the right, that she knew she had a talent, and she knew that if she wanted to make anything of it, she needed to be in London.
Yeah, and it's so true, isn't it? I mean, we were talking about the Bee Gees. They went back.
Absolutely, exactly the same thing. Yeah. Exactly the same thing. Like she could have stayed in Australia, and she would have had quite a successful career in Australia, but she would have been based in Australia, and it would have been an Australian-based career.
And just like the Bee Gees, it's interesting, the similarities. I mean, the Bee Gees were born in the UK. She was born in the UK. They both came out to Australia. They both went back to London.
And look, if you look at the other equivalent is John Farnham. You know, they grew up together in Melbourne. They knew each other. They were performing together. She went to London, became a global superstar. He stayed here and became a superstar in Australia.
Well, there you go. So they all did the right thing except for Johnny.
Yeah.
He had one hit, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, overseas.
That's what I meant. Yeah, he's God here, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so she then, on multiple times, actually booked a flight back home to Melbourne. And her mother went and cancelled the flights.
Oh, really?
I don't know
about this mother. She sounds tough to me.
and then things changed because a good friend of hers, Pat Carroll, who was also a singer in Melbourne, they, in fact, used to perform together on shows like Bandstand and Broadside in Melbourne. And they were best friends. She decided to go and join Olivia in London. In the late 60s. So she went over and moved in with Olivia and Olivia's mother, and then they started performing as Pat and Olivia together.
Oh.
And so they started doing a club circuit in the UK. So they were travelling around the UK doing these cutesy little 60s girl group numbers.
It was perfect decade to do that stuff, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. So they sort of was starting to build a name for themselves doing that. And through that, they met Cliff Richard.
Ah.
And Cliff invited Olivia on to appear on his TV show as a singer, as a guest vocalist.
Mm.
And they got on so well that Cliff kept inviting her back week after week.
Really?
And eventually she became a permanent member of the show, of his TV show. And she even was the female lead in one of his TV specials called The Case. In, I think it was early 70s, he did a silly little telefilm called The Case, and she's the lead in that.
Wow.
And, of course, they've had numerous hits over the years together, Cliff and Olivia. In fact, Cliff has often said that Olivia is one of his closest and best friends, and Olivia said exactly the same thing about him.
Hmm.
And to give you an indication of the strength of their friendship and the bond and what they meant to each other, you may remember a couple of years ago there was a ridiculous claim against Cliff Richard for being a pedophile.
We've actually talked about this on air, yes.
And of course, all the absolutely no grounding to it. And
it was the BBC that started that.
Yeah. But when that happened, Cliff escaped. He just took to the Mediterranean on his yacht.
So right. Good
for
him.
And just said, I'm not listening, I'm out of contact, I'm just going away. And he took Olivia with him on that trip.
Gosh. Okay, now if you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Sydney in Australia. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent, but also our music guru. And we're celebrating the life of Olivia Newton-John, who recently passed away. Now, I want to spend our final 10 minutes or so talking about the wellness centre that,
yes,
that she has had. Just give us an update and a background to how this, I mean, we obviously know why she started it, but it's been hugely successful, Adam.
It certainly has. After her breast cancer, her first bout of breast cancer, the Austin Hospital in Melbourne contacted her. They were building a new cancer centre.
Yeah.
And they asked her if they could use her name to call it the Olivia Newton-John Cancer Centre, and that would help them to raise money,
right,
to fund it. And she thought about it for a little while, and then she got back to them and she said, you can use my name under one condition. And they were like, what's that condition? And she said, I want to have a wellness centre as part of it. I want to have a place where people who are having chemotherapy and radiology and all of that sort of treatment that's really harrowing on your body.
Yes.
I want them to be able, in the same hospital, to be able to do meditation, to be able to do yoga, to be able to have music therapy, art therapy, pet therapy, you know, all of these alternative treatments that she was a big advocate of, which she says helped her get through her treatment, her first bout of cancer. And she said she wanted that right side by side in the same venue as where they're getting the chemotherapy and having their operations and having radiotherapy and such like that. Mm. And she said, and I will raise the money for that.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, we're here, sign here. We're in.
Yeah.
And so she started raising money.
Of course they would, wouldn't they?
She's yeah.
getting money for them.
Now, for the last 30 years, she has worked tirelessly raising money for cancer research.
Yeah.
To the point where the Olivia Newton-John Cancer Wellness and Research Centre in Melbourne is now one of the premium top cancer research centres on the planet.
Which is amazing, isn't it?
Which is amazing.
You'd expect that to be in Britain, you know, or America.
Yeah. But it's here in Melbourne, in Australia.
Mm. Mm.
And that only happened because of Olivia Newton-John and the money that she raised. You know, she would go on, she would do tours, she would release albums, she would do charity events, and all of the proceeds from this stuff was going into the centre. Over $300 million was raised. You know, she took a whole bunch of celebrities on a walk across the Great Wall of China, and you could sponsor your favorite celebrity that was on it. And that had people like Joan Rivers, for example.
Of all people, wow.
Of all people.
Mm.
In fact, there's a funny joke that Joan says is that I saw when she was on the wall with Olivia, and she was being interviewed by an American, I think it was a morning TV show, and they went, Joan, what are you doing walking the Great Wall of China with Olivia Newton-John? How did this come about? And she went, yes. I'm old, my hearing's bad. I thought she said, do you want to go to the Great Mall of China?
I did see pictures of that, actually. And what a great way to raise money, eh?
Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, she did a walk here in Melbourne every year called the Wellness Walk, where she would walk there were either 5 or 10K in around the streets of Melbourne from her hospital. Mm. And you could enter that and you get sponsorships and you could walk with her on the walk. I did that numerous times, and walking and chatting with her while we were doing it.
Wow. Really?
And just amazing. Yeah. Look, I had the absolute honor and privilege of meeting Olivia probably 8 or 10 times.
Really? I did not know this. Of all the years I've been talking to you, I didn't realize you met. I'm sure you've told me.
Yeah.
We are running out of time. I just want to mention your notes on this about the use of cannabis as treatment, and yes, also the US, you know, setting up in the US, Olivia Newton-John Foundation, which is a big deal, yeah, because it's the US with, you know,
yes,
so many millions of people, 360 mm. million people. Just give us an idea of that.
Yeah. Look, she, with her second and third bouts of cancer, she started using medicinal cannabis. Mm. Her husband, John Easterling, is a herbalist. And he cultivated a special blends of cannabis to address the pain issues that Olivia was having.
Yes.
And so she, for a long time, was completely off any sort of opioids for pain relief because she was using cannabis. And she said many times that that gave her a much better quality of life. Mm. She was able to function. She could work. She could raise money for cancer research.
Was she successful with this?
Well, yes. Well,
it's hard to tell because you're dealing with governments, you're dealing with legalizations, that kind of thing, in different states as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's why she set up the Olivia Newton-John Foundation a couple of years ago, which is separate from her hospital in Melbourne, because the function for the foundation is to look and to do research into plant-based cancer treatments.
Right.
Her philosophy, her belief is that for every ailment we have, there's a plant on this planet that can cure it. We just have to find it.
What a beautiful thing to think about.
Yeah.
That everything is natural in the end anyway, you know?
Exactly. And so that's why she set up this foundation. She knew when she set the foundation up that her time here was limited. Mm. And so she knew that if she didn't set something up like this foundation, there was a very real chance that all of the work and all of the effort and money she's raised and everything she's devoted the last 30 years of her life to may end up as just petering out. And so she set up this new foundation, the Olivia Newton-John Foundation, and she's channeled funds into that. It will continue to fundraise. It's a major foundation now in America, which is advocating and researching into plant-based cancer treatments.
Because she
also believes that not only is there a plant out there to cure any illness we get, but a natural plant-based medicine is going to be much calmer, much easier on your body than a drug.
What a fantastic life she's had, and what great things she's done, especially for, you know, people with cancer must be looking at this, and people who are on these horrible meds must be thinking there is another way. Adam, I could talk to you all evening about this, but we have to go. I would like you, if you could, to pay your respects to ONJ and then introduce your song.
Absolutely. Olivia Newton-John, as I said earlier, is the soundtrack to my life. The very first song that I can remember hearing that I wanted to know who it was singing was Olivia Newton-John. At every major point in my life, whether it be a high point or a low point, there's an Olivia Newton-John song to me that represents that point in my life. She was an amazing person. She was an author, a songwriter, a producer, an actress, and of course a singer. She was also a philanthropist. She was an environmentalist. She was the very first United Nations ambassador for the environment back in the early 90s. Mm. She had her own wildlife TV program called Wildlife, which was a fascinating series. So, you know, film star, sellout world tours. This woman was an entertainment phenomenon. Now, not only was she a phenomenon, but she was also an incredibly down-to-earth, honest, lovely person. There aren't many celebrities who have been around for as long as Olivia Newton-John has where there haven't been any scandals or where there's not people who have said nasty things about them in the career. Just look at any entertainer and there's always something negative out there about them. You won't find anything on Olivia Newton-John. Mm. There's just no one has anything bad to say about this woman. To give you an example of what she's like, I mean, in the 70s, she sued MCA, her record company, for $10 million because they didn't promote one of her albums the way that they were meant to.
Really?
And she won the case.
Yeah.
And they re-signed her because of who she is.
Well, that's amazing, yes.
So, you know, Olivia, to me, was more than a singer. She was an inspiration in my life. She inspired me to be a better person. She, whenever I was in a situation where I wanted to do something and I knew that it was not nice to do, I would just, and this is going to sound super corny, but I would just stop and say to myself, is that the sort of thing Olivia would do?
Yes.
And if it's not, if the answer's no, well, then why the hell am I doing it?
good call.
So, you know, much more than just a person to me. She was an icon, an inspiration. And I just loved everything about this woman. It's been the toughest week for me since she died. I've been in tears. I've watched an awful lot of stuff. I've listened to a lot of music. I've spoken to a lot of people about her. And I just look back at my life and I go, wow, you know, of all of the people, of all of the pop stars in the late 70s and early 80s when I was a child that I could have got obsessed with, damn, I chose well.
You certainly did. Would you like to present this song for us?
I will. This song is off her album, Grace and Gratitude. Now, Grace and Gratitude was released in 2006. It's a healing, meditative album. It's new age, world type music. She wrote a lot of the songs on this herself. Now, when I say meditative and healing, it's if you put the album on, if you play the album, start at track one, and you don't have it on shuffle, so you play it in sequence, so track one, two, three, etc., through to the end, it's one continuous piece of music.
Oh.
The whole album.
It's like Pink Floyd used to do.
So she's put interludes in between the songs, which seamlessly merge one song to the other song. So you can put this, if you're having chemotherapy, if you're having, even if you're just having a long hot bath, or you're having a massage, or you're just, you know, you're taking some pain meds and you just want to relax, you can put this album on and there's no break in music from the beginning till the end.
Right.
And it's stunningly beautiful. It's so well produced, so well written. And out of everything that Olivia's recorded, this album to me is the one that I have listened to the most in her catalogue. Mm. It's the album that has the most emotional impact on me. And I think it's, for my ears, her finest achievement in the recording studio. And from that album, I wanted to end this today with what I think is the greatest song on that album. But before I announce the song, I just wanted to say to Olivia Newton-John, thank you for providing the soundtrack to my life and, in essence, a moral guide to get me through my life, if that makes sense.
Of course.
And so, look, here it is. This song is stunningly beautiful. She's never sounded better. It's emotional. It's heartwarming. This song has brought me to tears many times, particularly in the last week. And I hope that, dear listener, that you get as much out of this song as I do. Here is Olivia Newton-John, Vale Olivia Newton-John. May she rest in peace. and thank you for everything she did for everyone. Here she is with To Be Wanted.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.